Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to our show. Reading from the Playboy magazine again. Here's an interesting little article. It's called Hotel Motel Holiday Inn. What is it about a hotel woman that makes hotel room that makes the woman in your life go wild? For years, I stupidly didn't care which hotels I stayed in. Some were called residence, others invoked holidays. Many had a number in their name for reasons that made me assume their first attempts at running a motel had failed. But I didn't understand why anyone would pay a lot of money for a place where you spend the vast majority of your time unconscious. Had a friend who for his living girlfriend's birthday or their anniversary would book a hotel room in the same city they lived in, which is clearly insane. I couldn't figure out why his girlfriend liked this. Hey, for your present, I'm taking you on a vacation down the street. That's like buying her a piece of jewelry she already has and making her pack a suitcase to get it. That's when I had to book a hotel through the magazine's travel department. They suggested the Mondrian, an expensive place in Los Angeles. I took it since I was traveling with a girlfriend I wanted to impress. And I was a magazine writer, which doesn't impress anyone. The huge lobby, the employees constantly saying hi, all of it did nothing for me. But interestingly, it made her want to have sex. I don't think it even mattered that the sex was with me. I think she wanted to have sex inside that hotel room. If I understood all this earlier, not only would I have booked way nicer hotels, I would have gone to Cornell's hotel school. I've since learned that when a woman walks into a hotel room, she immediately starts to think about sex, whereas I think about sex no matter where I am. I'm thinking it's a good time to have sex when we're hiking in a forest, when we're in a car, when we're at a place with a one-person bathroom, when we're in a place with a bathroom for a whole lot of people, but it had stalls with no doors on them. Basically, anytime we're in a room and our biological parents are not. Women think about sex in a hotel room because it's the one place they don't have to stress about stuff. Dinner, not their responsibility. Pile of laundry that has to be cleaned, there isn't one. But there's about to be. You can say lame stuff like that in a hotel room and still have sex. There's no stack of bills, no stack of dishes in the sink, no stack of magazines that are supposed to be read. In other words, where the worries of the world are removed, women are just like men, or the logical contrapositive. Men's minds are always empty. Hotel rooms, hotels, pay-per-view television still has porn, which seems to make no sense in the age of Wi-Fi. It's there because women will playfully suggest watching porn in a hotel room, and if you can never coax them into doing that at home, because it's a hotel on a hotel TV for 15 discreetly billed dollars, approximately infinity higher than the cost of far superior porn online. Porn is classy. This super nice hotel, after all, has sanctioned it. This is rich people's porn, porn in which men might ask permission before they come on your face. I would imagine all this to be true in a crappy motel room, which is a place where you don't have to think about anything when you do think about something that's really, really dirty. In fact, I have no idea what people do in cheap hotel rooms besides have sex. Maybe drugs, but they probably have sex after the drugs. But in a bad motel room, women are right back to worrying about things, specifically the kind of thugs that happen to be in bad motels. Bed bugs, dirty bathrooms, even women who fantasize about bad things happening to them want those only in a really nice hotel room. The reason men cheat when they're away from conferences isn't that they know they won't get caught. They would cheat anyway. It's that conferences are the only time women are attracted to them. Because women at conferences have hotel rooms, and for them it's not using a hotel room for sex is like showing up at happy hour and not eating the chicken wings. The point is, women will have sex with you in a hotel even if you're married and just ate chicken wings. I clearly don't know how women think, but I do know they think all the time. And if you can find something to turn off all that thinking for 12 to 18 minutes, it's worth the money. It's why there are spas, yoga studios, serotonin inhibitors in fashion magazines, and nice hotel rooms. If a hotel room comes with a glass of wine when you walk in and has a robe in the bathroom, make a reservation. And you can do this anytime. You barely need an excuse. Well, I think I might drink a lot at dinner, so let's get a hotel nearby. Works. She won't mention Uber. She won't question all the times you drank a lot and didn't suggest getting a room because she's already thinking about sex. And some other stuff. Once she gets to the hotel, she'll forget all about the other stuff. Here's another little article. It's called About That Night. Nothing is more awkward than running into that guy you slept with once. I've always appreciated getting a heads up from the host of a party if someone who I've been intimate with is involved. The for your information, someone you slept with is going to be at my party message. You don't want to get caught in a Frito scoop full of seven-layer dip in your hand when someone who has seen you naked walks up with a hot, scoopless date. Running into a real ex is a whole other thing, but for me, running into a one-night, one-week stand has always been more embarrassing. Until recently, I didn't totally understand why. Once I hooked up with a guy who was just out of a relationship as I was, and we both agreed one fun night with no follow-up emails or calls or dates or applications, just a one-off, a fun-off, just an inside, a name drop without a name, the guy became super famous a short while later. We made out in a bar on the street in front of the bar, on the curb in the residential neighborhood surrounding the bar, and when the bouncer made it clear we didn't have the... He didn't have the enthusiasm for us that we had for each other. The guy's friend eventually dropped us off at my place. It didn't take long for him to tour my junior one bedroom and meet my two cats. It was clear he was not a cat person. I would usually keep the cats out of the bedroom, but this was a one night only thing and the cats were not, so they stayed. We had a good time, but we got pretty drunk. It was neither of my best work, but I would stand by it in court. He did this, then I did that. It all worked together. It was a fun-off. I think the jury would rule that it was an average hookup and that we both had nothing to be embarrassed about. So an alcohol went from giving us energy to making us feel dead tired. We gave in. We celebrated a job well enough done by snuggling up to each other, strangers on my queen-size pillow top. His body wrapped around mine, legs touching, arms touching, faces touching, strangers just hours earlier now touching faces. Two slumbering strangers with totally and completely vulnerable. I sleep in a fetal position. I assume the big spoon. I made a little whistle in my nose through myself that I'm self-conscious about. He snored lightly and bit his fingernails. And hopefully it made us even. I stared at his face while he slept. I'm aware that sounds creepy. That's something else. Looking at a person's face, sleeping face, seeing their wrinkles fade away as their muscles relax. Feeling the tension of life leave their body for a few hours. Feeling their toe hair and their rogue hairs on the back of their on the neck that they don't even know what kind of hairs they are. You spend more time cuddled up with a person post-hookup than you do or actually hooking up, which is why I realized I was embarrassed when I ran into this now-famous guy. We'd been more than intimate with each other. We'd been intimate with each other. Sleeping together was more intimate than sleeping together. I drooled. I freaking drooled. I'm not embarrassed about the sex or that he was seeing me naked. I thought I was, but I'm embarrassed that he knows me. And I nose, my nose whistles. I'm embarrassed that we held each other, that I stared at him sleeping, that we slept intertwined for a long time, minus the few minutes I let quietly to fart into towels. I'm very ladylike. But why? Why is that type of intimacy embarrassing in sex? It's not. I guess because we're kind of vulnerable, less vulnerable during sex when our animal instincts take over. Afterward, we're back to being regular humans who bite their nails, put down the shower curtains, in the hallway every night because their cat pees in the carpet. I've hooked up with a lot of guys, and I don't remember the hooking up, but I do remember the intimate things about them. A tattoo of a dragon that faded and bled like a fat snake. A tan line that revealed the dude was the owner of some European-cut swimsuit. And I remember some things from their bedroom, posters of bands that once defined them, Rush. Books that they aspired to read on the floor, Crime and Punishment, and books they'd actually read, Gone Girl, a sort of Crime and Punishment light, souvenirs from life they'd lived, a college diploma, evidence of the life they wanted, a book on screenwriting, a new guitar, travel guide to Argentina from 10 years earlier. And then there are our bedrooms and what they remember about us, the one-night stands, nose whistles, regrettable tattoos, empty Tylenol PM bottles. The bride's magazines on the nightstand, clearly not being read by any soon-to-be bride. They take mental Polaroids of us as we do of them. But maybe it's not so embarrassing. Maybe the real intimacy is weirdly beautiful, your body and your life lazily intertwined with the stranger for the night. Just two humans being human. So next time you're at a friend's party and run into a girl holding a Frito scoop who you know from personal experience drools and sneaks off to fart into towels in the middle of the night, be kind. Maybe she won't tell anyone you like to be the little spoon. Playboy advisor. I'm a very sexual individual with a wonderful wife of more than 20 years. She's given me countless phenomenal blowjobs. If we could bottle and sell her technique, we'd be millionaires. In addition to incredible oral sex I get several times a week, we regularly have intercourse, just not early in the day. I've never been able to convince her to experiment with morning sex, even though I've always had enormous morning wood. How do I get her excited about sex in the a.m.? Have you tried brushing your teeth first? I got my one and only tattoo in 1980, and immediately after I completed basic training. A year later, I grew unhappy with the tattoo and tried to get rid of it through a do-it-yourself remover. It was painful and made a mess of the design. Then a few years after that, I went to a doctor for dermabrasion treatment. The process was excruciating. I succeeded in removing 95% of the ink along with the skin pigmentation. Despite my unpleasant and painful experiences, I'm contemplating getting another tattoo. But this time I want to know in advance about my removal options. Have things changed in the past 3 decades? Tattoo removal technology has advanced since your last brutal brush with dermabrasion, but a tattoo is still not an easy thing to undo. It remains painful, complicated, no matter the process. Dermabrasion was the quickest route to removal, but it frequently had the unfortunate side effect of leaving a scar, which is why the process has fallen out of favor. Laser removal is now the most commonly performed procedure, but it can be costly and take upward to 10 visits to completely remove the ink, depending on the size and complexity of the tattoo. Removing a tattoo with multiple colors may require various layers, laser types, because not all lasers are capable of destroying all pigments. If you really want to nerd it out, then the only acceptable type of lasers for tattoo removal are Q-stitch lasers and ruby, each one doing a better job than the other destroying certain pigments. The more colorful and complicated the tattoo, the more laser types will be involved. If you're not willing to commit to a tattoo to life, consider opting out. The adage remains, think before you ink. I was raised a Catholic girl, but now I'm agnostic. Despite this, I still find myself shattering, oh God, during orgasms. I wondered why women in other countries say when they climax, what do you think? Much has been said about the sudden apparent religiosity that descends upon even the most ardent agnostics and non-believers in the moment of orgasm. References to a deity certainly cross borders, showing up in German, oh God, Spanish, Dios mío, but we think uses are more likely to be happy expletives than prayers. Along with variations on Oh God theme, there are of course international versions, I'm coming, I Ku in Japanese, Mi Koro in Spanish, JVNs in French. No matter the faith or nationality, it's a moment, it's all metaphor, or better yet, metaphor play. For several years, my wife and I have been collecting whiskey. Our collection now includes more than 150 bottles, with a total value of somewhere between $10,000 and $15,000. We're wondering what option exists to protect our investment. Recently, we've seen advertisements for whiskey insurance to protect against broken bottles, theft, and unauthorized consumption. Are these legitimate companies and policies, or are we better off purchasing a rider on our homeowner's insurance? Contact your insurance agent and check your current coverage. It's possible your collection is already covered along with the rest of your belongings. If you do need a rider or have to increase your coverage, that will likely be much easier and more cost-effective than buying a separate policy. Whatever you choose to do, be sure the documents on each bottle are an itemized list and photographs. Store these records off-site or online. Should misfortune befall your fine stash, you'll be glad you have these files to refer to. My wife and I have been together for about 2 decades and always had a good sex life and a great marriage. Shortly after we married, we got into gameplay and soft swinging with a couple we know. Unfortunately, the couple we're swinging with separated. I still have fantasies about engaging in gameplay and possibly a threesome with the man from this couple and my wife. He's still a close friend of ours. Is it a good idea? Is it normal? As much as we would all be comforted by the notion of normalcy, there's no such thing. If you're asking what your suggestion is commonly accepted in society, it depends entirely on the society you're part of. If you're already part of the swinging culture in which you have sex in front of other men, it's statistically more common than in society at large. As for whether it's a good idea to have a threesome, of course it's okay if everyone's on board. You seem to be a liberal and freewheeling crew, so we can't see any harm in at least inquiring. Just be prepared for a yes or no, and if both your wife and your friend go for it, be sure to lay out the ground rules and expectations ahead of time. I'm 43 and look good for my age. I attribute this to diet, exercise, and drinking a lot of water. Because I keep myself well hydrated, I have a hyperactive bladder. I usually have to urinate 2 times during the night to avoid disrupting my sleep too much. I pee in a glass cup, which I clean regularly and keep beside the bed. I just started a new relationship and haven't yet exposed my girlfriend to my nighttime routine. Her bedroom doesn't have an attached bathroom, and I must go down steep stairs to use the toilet at night. Sometimes I can't go back to sleep afterward. It's usually my peek up at night for etiquette while I'm in a relationship. It would be one thing if you were living in a cabin in the woods in the dead of winter under the threat of an attack from hungry bears with an outhouse as your only option for relieving yourself. But the days of chamber pots are long behind us, and it's time for you to retire this quirky indulgence before you scare away your new girlfriend. Try tapering off your water intake during the evening hours, basically refraining from your hyperhydration routine after 6 p.m. Just be sure you get plenty of water earlier in the day. Not long ago, my best friend became my boss. Soon after, he distanced me at work over a slight matter, and I didn't think it was at all warranted. The who's and what's aren't particularly significant, but the result is that now I'm conflicted about being the best man at his upcoming wedding, a commitment I made well before our disagreement. Prior to the incident, word I would have unhesitatingly served as best man, but now I can't help but feel as though I would be disgracing his marriage if I'm not fully committed. Am I being overly sensitive, or does my friend have an obligation to work this out with me to my satisfaction? Don't let this small offense undo years of goodwill you've clearly built up with each other. To refuse to be your friend's best man over this isolated instance, which you even characterize as a slight, would be petty. Is it possible you're resentful for his becoming your boss and getting married? Could the incident have been caused by your friend's insecurity in his new role as your superior at work? Whether the answers are yes or no, what's aren't actually that important, as you say. We're guessing if you bury the hatchet and support your friend on his wedding day, he'll feel a lot better about everything. I have a problem with condoms slipping off while I'm having sex. I use regular non-specific sizes, which I read in some recent research shows the average length of an erect penis is 5.2 inches, while the girth is 4.6 inches. Mine is longer than 6.5 inches while erect, but with a girth well beyond 4.6. This kind of mishap has occurred a few times throughout my life, and I have friends who have complained of similar problems. They feel snug when they go on, but suddenly slip off and disappear, sort of having to hold the condom on to my shaft. I'd rather be doing other things with my hand. What can I do? Are there any condoms that are specially made to stay put? Try going down a size in terms of your circumference. Look for condoms labeled or marketed as snug or slim. Don't worry, you will never have to ask for condoms in the small size. There's no such thing. Just as there are no 13th floors in most buildings. Also, take care not to get any lubrication inside the condom, which can cause it to slip off. In the interest of safe sex, don't imagine your hand grip technique until you've made absolutely sure you found the proper fit. I'm planning a trip to Japan next spring that will hopefully coincide with the blossoming of the cherry trees. In addition, I plan to see Mount Fuji, the White Castle in Osaka, and the Imperial Palace, among other sites. Another must for the vacation is booking an evening with the geisha. I'm aware that geishas are not prostitutes, and I'm not expecting anything sexual. I'm more interested in a Mako, an apparent apprentice geisha, because of her stricter attention to detail, more colorful kimono, makeup, and elaborate hairstyle. I'd love a one-on-one evening, probably with an interpreter, or perhaps a tea party setting, or a combination of two. I've read that formal introduction is necessary, but I don't know what that means. The best geishas are in Kyoto, so I'm interested only in that city. How much would a geisha experience cost, and how would I go about booking one? For a couple of $100, you can join a group experience at a popular ryokan, the term for traditional hotel in Kyoto, and performance space called the Gion Hatanaka, which includes musical dance performances by geisha and the opportunity to speak with them, albeit briefly. You may have to share a table with other guests, but you can book this in advance online. It's gotten rave reviews. For a more intimate experience, you might want to book a 5-star hotel in Kyoto and use its concierge to arrange a dinner at a restaurant with a geisha. These experiences can cost upward of $1,000. Are airline miles worth the trouble? Friends tell me they're getting tougher and tougher to redeem. I recently started traveling cross-country for work, and I'm wondering if I should commit to an airline's frequent flyer program in the hopes that I'll eventually earn enough miles to fly to Asia without having to shell out any cash. It's true that blackout dates and crowded flights make it harder to redeem miles, but it doesn't hurt to commit to one carrier, particularly if your company is paying for your tickets. Just be sure your carrier flies to or partners with airlines that travel to your fantasy destination. To jumpstart on stockpiling miles, search online for credit cards with big sign-up bonuses. A 40,000-mile sign-up bonus isn't uncommon if you pay off all your bills through that card. you'll be able to accumulate enough miles to get a free flight to Asia within a year. Don't expect to redeem the miles during peak travel times such as spring break, Christmas, and high summer. And be sure to zero out your balance every month, and interest charges can rapidly eat up the value of the miles you've earned. After decades of wearing standard neckties, I recently switched to bow ties. I watched several YouTube tutorials about how to tie one, and now I have four bow ties in my collection. I wear it as often as I can. Here's my first question. How appropriate is it today to wear a bow tie instead of a necktie? Bow tie wearers are definitely in a minority, especially in the business world. Though I've received many positive and complimentary comments when I've worn mine. Second, sometimes aristocratic characters on Downton Abbey wear white ties. Where can I buy one, and on what sort of occasion would I be able to wear it? The appropriateness of a bow tie in a business setting is entirely dependent on the kind of business you're talking about. Anyone who wears a bow tie is going to see as a person who wants to stand out from the crowd. In creative industries such as advertising or fashion, this can be a good thing, as the ability to make bold statements is seen by as a desirable trait and skill set. In finance and pharmaceuticals, not so much. But if you're going to wear a bow tie, knowing how to tie it shows true commitment to the look. You could probably avoid white ties altogether, as they are reserved only for the most formal of occasions. If you do go white, go all in. Waistcoat, hat and leather shoes. That said, don't hold your breath for such an invitation. And here's how we close out the show today. I love going down on my wife. What are the risks of my mouth and throat regarding whatever bacteria or viruses may normally be found down there? Neither of us has ever had another partner. If you're both as virginal as you say, then you have little to worry about and should enjoy your comparatively unique status as each other's lifetime one and only. There's a small chance that if she were to have a yeast infection, you might develop a oral yeast infection known as thrush. But it's treatable and should in no way discourage you from having your cake and eating it too. That's our show for today. Thanks for listening. Have a great day, great night, wherever you are. See you next time. Bye.